Chapter 26. Bull. Voices. Light. A sense of wrongness deep in places he couldn't identify. Bull tried to grit his teeth and found his jaw already clenched hard enough to ache. Someone cried out, but he didn't know where from. The light caught his attention. Simple white LED with a sanded backsplash to diffuse it. An emergency light. The kind that came on when power was down. It hurt to look at, but he did, using it to focus. If he could make that make sense, everything else would come. A chiming alarm kept tugging at his attention, coming from outside, in the corridor. Bull's mind tried to slide that way, going into the corridor, out into the wide, formless chaos, and he pulled it back to the light. It was like trying to wake up, except he was already awake. Slowly, he recognized the alarm as something he'd hear in the medical bay. He was in the medical bay, strapped onto a bed. The tugging sensation at his arm was a forced IV. With a moment of nauseating vertigo, his perception of the world shifted. He wasn't standing. He was lying down. Meaningless distinctions without gravity, but human brains couldn't seem to help trying to assert direction on the directionless. His neck ached. His head ached. Something else felt wrong. There were other people in the bay, men and women on every bed, most with their eyes closed. A new alarm sounded. The woman in the bay across from him losing blood pressure, crashing, dying. He shouted, and a man in a nurse's uniform came floating past. He adjusted something on her bed's control board, then pushed off and away. Bull tried to grab him as he went by, but he couldn't. He'd been in his office. Serge had already gone for the night. A few minor incidents were piled up from the day, the constant friction of a large, poorly disciplined crew. Like everyone else, he'd been waiting to see whether Holden and the Martians came back out of the station, or if something else would. The fear had made sleep unlikely. He started watching the presentation that the Rocinante had sent, James Holden looking surprisingly young and charming, saying, "This is what we're calling the slow zone." He remembered noticing that everyone had accepted Holden's name for the place, and wondered whether it was just that the man had gotten there first, or if there was something about charisma that translated across the void. And then he'd been here. Someone had attacked then. A torpedo had gotten past their defenses, or else sabotage. Maybe the whole damn ship was just coming apart. There was a comm interface on the bed. He pulled it over, logged in, and used his security override to open its range to the full ship and not just the nurse's station. He requested a connection to Sam, and a few heartbeats later, she appeared on the screen. Her hair was floating around her head. Null G always made him think of drowned people. The sclera of her left eye was the bright red of fresh blood. "Bull," she said with a grin that looked like relief. "Jesus Christ, with a side of chips, but I never thought I'd be glad to hear from you."
"Need a status report."
"Yeah," she said. "I better come by for this one. You in your office?"
"Medical bay," Bull said.
"Be there in a jiff," she said.
"Sam, what happened?"
"You remember that asshole who shot the ring and got turned into a thin paste when his ship hit the slow zone? Same thing."
"We went too fast," Bull said.
"We didn't. Something changed the rules on us. I've got a couple techs doing some quick and dirty tests to figure out what the new top speed is, but we're captured and floating into that big ring of ships, along with everybody else."
"The whole flotilla?"
"Everybody and their sisters," Sam said. A sense of grim despair undercut the lightness of her words. "No one's under their own power now except the shuttles that were inside the bays when it happened, and no one's willing to send them going too fast either. The behemoth was probably going the slowest when it happened. Other ships, it's worse."
"How bad?" floated in his mind. But something about the words refused to be asked. His mind skated over them, flickering. The deep sense of wrongness welled up in him.
First convenience, he said.
On my way, Sam said, and the connection dropped. He wanted to sag back into a pillow, wanted to feel the comforting hand of gravity pressing him down. He wanted the New Mexican sun streaming in through a glass window and the open air and blue sky. None of it was there. None of it would ever be.
Rest when you're dead, he thought, and thumbed the comm terminal on again.
Ashford and Pa weren't accepting connections, but they both took messages. He was in the process of connecting to the security office when a doctor came by and started talking with him. Min Sterling, her name was. Benny Cortland Mapu's second. He listened to her with half his attention. A third of the crew had been in their rest cycle, safely in their crash couches. The other two-thirds, him included, had slammed into walls or decks. The hand terminals they'd been looking at accelerating into projectiles. Something about network regrowth and zero gravity and spinal fluid. Bull wondered where Pa was. If she was dead and Ashford alive, it would be a problem. Disaster recovery could only go two ways. Either everyone pulled together and people lived, or they kept on with their tribal differences and fear and more people died. He had to find a way to coordinate with Earth and Mars. Everyone was going to be stressed for medical supplies. If he was going to make this work, he had to bring people together. He needed to see if Monica Stewart and her team, or anyway the part of her team that wasn't going to be charged with sabotage and executed, were still alive. If he could start putting out his own broadcasts, something along the lines of what she'd done with Holden. The doctor was getting agitated about something. He didn't notice when Sam came into the room. She was just floating there. Her left leg was in an improvised splint of nylon tape and packing foam. Bull put his palm out to the doctor, motioning for silence, and turned his attention to Sam.
"You've got the report?" he asked.
"I do," Sam said. "And you can have it as soon as you start listening to what she's saying."
"What?"
Sam pointed to Dr. Sterling.
"You have to listen to her, Bull. You have to hear what she's saying. It's important."
"I don't have time or patience."
"Bull," Sam snapped. "Can you feel anything? I mean, anything lower than your tits?" The sense of wrongness flooded over him, and with it, a visceral, profound fear. Vertigo passed through him again, and he closed his eyes. All the words the doctor had been saying, crushed spinal cord, diffuse blood pooling, paraplegic, finally reached his brain. To his shame, tears welled up in his eyes, blurring the women's faces.
"If the fibers grow back wrong," the doctor said, "the damage will be permanent. Our bodies weren't designed to heal in zero G. We're built to let things drain. You have a bolus of blood and spinal fluid putting pressure on the wound. We have to drain that, and we have to get the bone shards out of the way. We could start the regrowth now, but there are about a dozen people who need the nootropics just to stay alive."
"I understand," Bull said around the lump in his throat, hoping she'd stop talking, but her inertia kept her going on.
"If we can stabilize the damage and get the pressure off and get you under at least one-third G, we have a good chance of getting you back to some level of function."
"All right," Bull said.
The background of medical alerts and voices and the hum of the emergency air recyclers stood in for real silence.
"What's your recommendation?"
"Medical coma," the doctor said without hesitating. "We can slow down your system, stabilize you until we can evacuate."
Bull closed his eyes, squeezing the tears between the lids. All he had to say was yes, and it was all someone else's problem. It would all go away, and he'd wake up somewhere under thrust with his body coming back together. Or he wouldn't wake up at all. The moment lasted. He remembered walking among the defunct solar collectors, climbing them, bracing a ceramic beam with his knees while one of the other men on his team cut it, running.
He remembered a woman he'd been seeing on Tycho Station, and the way his body had felt against her. He could get it back, or some part of it. It wasn't gone.
"Thank you for your recommendation," he said. "Sam, I'll have that damage report now."
"Bull, no," Sam said. "You know what happens when one of my networks grows back wrong. I burn it out and start over. This is biology. We can't just yank out your wiring and reboot you, and you can't macho your way through it."
"Is that what I'm doing?" Bull said,
and he almost sounded like himself. "I'm serious," Sam said. "I don't care what you promised Fred Johnson or how tough you think you are. You're going to be a big boy and take your nasty medicine and get better, you got it?" She was on the edge of crying now. Blood was darkening her face. Some of her team were surely dead. People she'd known for years, maybe her whole life. People she'd worked with every day. With a clarity that felt almost spiritual, he saw the depth of her grief and felt it resonate within him. Everyone was going to be there now. Everyone who'd lived on every ship would have seen people they cared about broken or dead. And when people were grieving, they did things they wouldn't do sober.
"Look where we are, Sam," Bull said gently. "Look what we're doing here. Some things don't go back to normal."
Sam wiped her eyes with a sleeve cuff, and Bull turned to the doctor.
"I understand and respect your medical advice, but I can't take it right now. Once the ship and crew are out of danger, we'll revisit this. But until then, staying on duty is more important. Can you keep me cognitively functioning?"
"For a while, I can," the doctor said. "But you'll pay for it later."
"Thank you," Bull said, his voice soft and warm as flannel. "Now, Chief Engineer Rosenberg, give me the damage report." It wasn't good. The best thing Bull could say after reading Sam's report and consulting with the doctors and his own remaining security forces was that the Behemoth had weathered the storm better than some of the other ships. Being designed and constructed as a generation ship meant that the joints and environmental systems had been built with an eye for long-term wear. She'd been cruising at under 10% the slow zone's previous maximum speed when the change came. The massive deceleration had happened to all the ships at the same time, slowing them from their previous velocity to the barely perceptible drifting toward the station's captive ring in just under 5 seconds. If it had been instantaneous, no one would have lived through it. Even with the braking spread out, it had approached the edge of the survivable for many of them. People asleep or at workstations with crash couches had stood a chance. Anyone in an open corridor, or getting up for a bulb of coffee at the wrong moment, was simply dead. The count stood at 200 dead, and twice that many wounded. Three of the Martian ships that had been significantly faster than the Behemoth weren't responding, and the rest reported heavy casualties. The big Earth ships were marginally better. To make matters worse, the radio and laser signals going back out of the ring to what was left of the flotilla were bent enough that communication was just about impossible. Not that it would have mattered. The slow zone, shit, now he was thinking of it that way too, was doing everything it could to remind them how vast the distances were within it. At the velocities they had available to them now, getting to the ring would take as long as it had to reach it from the belt. Months at least. And that in shuttles. All the ships were captured. However many of them were left, they were on their own. The station's grip was pulling them into rough orbit around the glowing blue structure, and no amount of burn was able to affect their paths one way or the other. They couldn't speed up, and they couldn't stop. No one was under thrust, and it was making the medical crisis worse as zero-G complicated the injuries. The Behemoth's power grid, already weakened and patched after the torpedo launch debacle, had suffered a cascading ship-wide failure. Sam's team was trekking through the ship, resetting the tripped safeties, adding new patches to the mess.
One of the Earth ships had come close to losing core containment and gone through an automatic shutdown that left it running off batteries. Another was battling an environmental systems breakdown with the air recyclers. The Martian Navy ships might be fine, or they might be in ruins, but the Martian commander wasn't sharing. If it had been a battle, it would have been a humbling defeat. It hadn't even been an attack. "Then what would you call it?" Pa asked from the screen of his hand terminal. She and Ashford had both survived. Ashford was riding roughshod over the recovery efforts, trying, Bull thought, to micromanage the crisis out of existence. That left Pa at the helm to coordinate with all the other ships. She was better suited for it anyway. There was a chance, at least, that she would listen.
"If I were doing it, I'd call it progressive restraint," Bull said. "That asshole who shot the ring came through doing something fierce and he got locked down. There's rules about how fast you can go. Then Holden and those Marines go to the station. Something happens. Whatever's running the station gets its jock in a twist and things lock down harder. I don't know the mechanism of how they do it, but the logic's basic training stuff. It's allowing us as much freedom as it can, but the more we screw it up, the tighter the choke."
"Okay," Pa said, running a hand through her hair. She looked tired. "I can see that. So as long as it doesn't feel threatened, maybe things don't get worse."
"But if someone gets pissed," Bull said, "I don't know. Some Martian pendejo just lost all his friends or something. He decides to arm a nuke, walk it to the station and set it off, maybe things get a lot worse."
"All right.
We've got to get everyone acting together," Bull said. "Earth, Mars, us, everyone. Because if this was me, I'd escalate from a restraint to a coercive restraint to shooting someone. We don't want to get this thing to follow the same—"
"I said all right, Mr. Baca," Pa shouted. "That means I understood your point. You can stop making it, because the one thing I don't need right now is another self-righteous male telling me how high the stakes are and that I better not fuck things up. I got it. Thank you."
Bull blinked, opened his mouth, and closed it again. On his screen, Pa pinched the bridge of her nose. He heard echoes of Ashford in her frustration.
"Sorry, Exo," he said. "You're right. I was out of line."
"Don't worry about it, Mr. Baca," she said, each syllable pulling a weight behind it. "If you have any concrete, specific recommendations, my door is always open."
"I appreciate that," Bull said.
"So, the captain?"
"Captain Ashford's doing his best to keep the ship in condition and responsive. He feels that letting the crew see him will improve morale."
"And how's that going?"
Bull didn't ask. Didn't have to. Pa could see him restraining himself.
"Believe it or not, we are all on the same team," she said.
"I'll keep it in mind."
Her expression clouded and she leaned in toward her screen, a gesture of intimacy totally artificial in the floating world of zero-G and video connections, and still impossible to entirely escape.
"I heard about your condition. I'm sorry."
"It's all right," he said.
"If I ordered you to accept the medical coma?"
He laughed. Even that felt wrong. Truncated. "I'll go when I'm ready," he said, only realizing after the fact that the phrase could mean two different things. "We get out of the woods, the docks can take over."
"All right then," she said, and her terminal chimed. She cursed quietly.
"I have to go. I'll touch base with you later."
"You got it," Bull said and let the connection drop.
The wise thing would have been to sleep. He'd been awake for 14 hours, checking in with the security staff who were still alive, remaking a duty roster, doing all the things he could do from the medical bay that would make the ship work. 14 hours wasn't all that long a shift in the middle of a crisis, except that he'd been crippled. Crippled. With a sick feeling, he walked his fingertips down his throat, to his chest, and to the invisible line where the skin stopped feeling like his own and turned into something else. Meat. His mind skittered off the thought.
He'd been hurt before and gotten back from it. He'd damn near died 4 or 5 different times. Something always happened that got him back on his feet. He always got lucky. This time would be the same. Somehow he'd get back. Have another story to tell and no one to tell it to. He knew he was lying to himself. But what else could he do? Apart from stand aside, and maybe he should, let Pa take care of it, give Ashford his shot. No one would give him any shit if he took the medical coma. Not even Fred. Hell, Fred would probably have told him to do it. Ordered him. Bull closed his eyes. He'd sleep or he wouldn't. Or he'd drift into some half-lucid place that wasn't either. One of the doctors was weeping in the corridor, a slow, autonomic sound, more like being sick than expressing sorrow. Someone coughed wetly. Pneumonia was the worst danger now. Null G messed with the sensors that triggered the kinds of coughing that actually cleared lungs until it was too late. After that, strokes and embolisms, as the blood that gravity should have helped to drain, pooled and clotted instead. On all the other ships, it was the same. Survivable injuries made deadly just by floating. If they could just get under thrust, get some gravity. "We're all on the same team," Pa said in his half-drowse, and Bull was suddenly completely awake. He scooped up his hand terminal, but Ashford and Pa were both refusing connections. It was the middle of their night. He considered putting through an emergency override, but didn't. Not yet. First he tried Sam. "Bull?" she said. Her skin looked grayish, and there were lines at the corners of her mouth that hadn't been there before. Her one blood-red eye seemed like an omen. "Hey, Sam. Look, we need to get all the other crews from all the other ships onto the Behemoth. Bring everyone together so no one does anything stupid." "You want a pony, too?" "Sure," Bull said. "Thing is, we got to give them a reason to come here. Something they need and they can't get anyplace else." "Sounds great," Sam said, shaking her head. "Maybe I'm not at my cognitive best here, sweetie, but are you asking me for something?" "They've all got casualties. They all need gravity. I'm asking you how long it would take you to spin up the drum."